91.7 WVXU, Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Recreational marijuana use is now legal in Washington and Colorado. Colorado announced yesterday it took in $3.5 million in marijuana taxes and fees, $2 million of it from recreational marijuana use. As prisons become more crowded, many are asking if it's time to broadly legalize or decriminalize marijuana and other controlled substances. Today, we're going to talk about the pros and cons. Joining me are Coalition for a Drug-Free Cincinnati Executive Director Mary Haig, Executive Director of Prospect House Dave Logan, and author of Drugs, Crime, and Violence, From Trafficking to Treatment, and former Cincinnati Police Captain Howard Rotz. He's also the past Executive Director of the Alcoholism Council. You can join the conversation. Call us at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
One of the things we've certainly heard for years is the war on drugs. It's been going on for more than 40 years. Mary, we'll start with you. How effective do you think it's been?
Well, from a prevention perspective, which is mine, I've seen decreases in use among youth. So we're working very hard at it, and we are actually seeing outcomes from it.
Dave?
Well, it's difficult to have a capsule response to that, but I think it's been, I think a lot of people in the field would interpret it as more a war on addicts than a war on drugs, because you look at the prison population in the state of Ohio over the last 40 years, it's gone up by a factor of 7, which is astonishing, and that is primarily due to drug offenses. And this is all money that is not being spent on treatment and prevention.
Howard?
I think it's been an utter failure. After nearly 50 years, we spent more money, millions of people incarcerated, thousands more killed in drug violence, and the stats are basically unchanged. Every once in a while, we'll see youth usage of marijuana drop a little bit, but heroin's now a big problem. So the nature of drug use is a little bit faddish over the years, but in general, despite spending more money than any other country in the world, we have less to show for it.
So what do you think the answer is? There are lots of ideas out there, and we have a whole hour to talk about it. But what do you think about some of the ideas in Ohio? There's been some decriminalization. There's been this change in the enforcement or in some of the ways that people are treated after they've been arrested for those sorts of situations. Howard, start with you. What do you think about the changes that have been made?
You know, there's been some positive changes over the years. I think there's a lot more to go. I think Colorado and Washington are showing the way. I have some good friends out there who assure me that despite the legalization of marijuana for recreational use, that the sky hasn't yet fallen. And you just mentioned a pretty nice piece of tax revenue coming in. And I'm a big believer in legalization of marijuana for two reasons. One is we can quit incarcerating all these people. We arrest now 750,000 people in this country for marijuana possession. Total waste of criminal justice resources. The other thing we can do is with legalization, as Colorado and Washington have done, we're going to earmark some of that revenue to provide some of the treatment to programs like Dave's and some of the prevention programs like Mary is involved in to have a real impact. As we look now, and we're suffering an extremely horrendous heroin program in this part of the country, and everybody talks about the need for resources. I don't think there's any disagreement that we need a lot more treatment. The problem is there's so much competition for those resources. I believe we need an earmarked source of funds to provide that. And marijuana would do that.
Mary?
Well, I take a different perspective. I have seen the results of prevention. There is no silver bullet, but it takes a comprehensive whole community approach. We know in some of these states where marijuana has been legalized either for recreational use or supposed medicinal use, that youth have greater access to it. And when they do, they get it, they use it, and they have higher rates of addiction, as well as some of the consequences from that, such as traffic fatalities, traffic accidents that are not from driving under the influence of alcohol, but driving under the influence of drugs. So we know when this happens, legalizing it for adults, that it does increase access for kids. Now, why is that particularly important. Well, that's because if youth are starting to use at these young ages, they are much more likely to develop an addiction. And if we can reduce that age when kids are starting to use, and multiple drug using on top of that, then we will see much less problems on the addiction side of things, and therefore the social consequences that go with it, such as crime.
Dave?
Well, I look at it from the treatment perspective, and we don't make a distinction at Prospect House between legal and illegal drugs. We just take the same attitude toward all of them. You know, that's the way our analytical knife cuts into the pie.
So, for example, people can be addicted to prescription drugs. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I do remember many, many years ago, I'm a person myself in long-term recovery from alcoholism, and I remember it was long enough ago that I had snuck into a young people's AA meeting, and I asked a young person there, I understand that you're here for the same reason I am, which is to get clean and sober, but he was, I think, 13 years old, and I said, but tell me why it's all drugs with you rather than any drinking whatsoever, and he said, well, drugs are easier to get. It's just that simple. Despite the fact that they were, even then, XXX illegal, he found it easier to find drugs as a 13-year-old than to find alcohol. And I've never forgotten that story. I mean, people will actually deliver drugs to your door, such as the profit in that industry. They won't deliver you a six-pack, but they will deliver drugs to you.
Mary?
Well, I mean, our data shows, even today, that we just released, that kids tell us that it is not easy to get illegal drugs, especially. It's easier to get drugs. It's easier to get alcohol and tobacco because they are legal and they're in their own homes. When we look at kids, their access point is usually in their home or in the home of their friends.
Howard?
On the easier to get drugs, Mary's findings, and I haven't had a chance to look at them, but it's easier for kids to get alcohol because it's in their homes. But if we talk about easier to get drugs as opposed in a regulated marketplace, drugs would be harder to get. Any kid can go out now, put themselves in an illegal market, go downtown. It's one of the most dangerous things people can do. And we've seen, and I saw personally, instance after instance of kids in this town from the suburbs going down to the inner city to try to buy drugs, getting in over the head. That never happens when kids are involved with alcohol. So I think the legality is a major issue.
Do you think if the drugs are made legal that the underground market will completely go away then?
I think it probably will. And there's two things and historical things that caused me to think that. One is alcohol prohibition. How many of us buy bootleg gin anymore? I mean, alcohol is a legal drug. There's very little. Despite alcohol still being illegal in significant parts of the country, you don't have that. The other thing is cigarettes. The tax has been increased on cigarettes. It's legal, but there's no market for illegal cigarettes. And gambling is the other one. When gambling was legalized, the big concern was the mafia, organized crime is going to take it over. People say that now about the legalization of drugs. It doesn't appear to happen. With the control that we have through marketplace regulation, we can make sure that doesn't occur, in fact.
Yeah, the population I'm concerned with and that I know best and that I'm just trying to describe already has established addiction. They have a kind of a tropism toward the buzz, toward getting high. And those are the people for whom legal or illegal is almost a meaningless distinction. They just go ahead and find whatever it is they're after. And if you wanted to do a really damaging social experiment, you could, I think about 40% of Americans still smoke tobacco. You could make that illegal. And I think you would watch crime skyrocket around that, because I think people would break the law to get their cigarettes because they are addicted.
Is there a difference, or do you think the difference that would be made between legalization and decriminalization and just the changes in the law, even if the drugs still remain illegal?
Well, some of the research I did before coming here today demonstrated, and this is national, that there's not those who are incarcerated, it's not for possession so much as trafficking. And I think that's a distinction to make. I also know that This was in Hamilton County. 90% of the inmates have a substance abuse problem. So I think there's opportunities when someone is incarcerated to take that time to do something about the problem of addiction that they have.
So I think that the problem is the criminal justice system is a bad alternative to try to turn people around. We say you can get over an addiction, but you can't get over a conviction. And we have so many people who are suffering from these weed arrests, drug abuse. It really ruins their life in large part. And using the criminal justice system as a hammer to get people into treatment, I think there's better ways of doing it. So I'm for decriminalization of all drug possession, not trafficking, but drug possession.
Any drugs, just marijuana?
Any drug. I'd vote for legalization of marijuana, not just medical marijuana, but recreational marijuana. In terms of the other drugs, the RAND Corporation said the four drugs that cause 90% of our problem are heroin, crack, cocaine, which is essentially the same, and methamphetamine. Marijuana is not on that list. If we decriminalize possession there, follow the example of the Netherlands and Portugal, what we would find is so much less pressure on the criminal justice so that police and the criminal justice system would be freed up and have resources to deal with really more serious problems. And the one that I think of is we've got untested rape kits. I think the number is about 2,000 in the state of Ohio that are just sitting there for lack of resources. And to me, that ought to be a bigger priority than locking people up for using marijuana.
We're talking this afternoon about changing the drug laws and some discussion of drug laws in our area and around the country. We're going to continue our discussion shortly. You can call us now at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking this afternoon about changing the drug laws to legalize or decriminalize marijuana and other controlled substances. Joining me, Coalition for a Drug-Free Cincinnati Executive Director Mary Haig, Executive Director of Prospect House Dave Logan, and author and former Cincinnati Police Captain Howard Ratz. He's written the book Drugs, Crime, and Violence: From Trafficking to Treatment. He's also the past Executive Director of the Alcoholism Council. You can call us with your comments or questions at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Well, the Netherlands was brought up while we right before we went to break and some of the drug laws there. Mary, you had some thoughts about that.
Well, the research that I had read was that we know that it's legalized in the Netherlands, but that what happened as a result is they have some of the highest rates of addiction in the world.
To marijuana.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And Howard?
I haven't seen the study, but it doesn't sound like the research that I've read. Actually, marijuana is not legal in the Netherlands. They've set up a system, these coffee houses, where you can go in and legally consume it, but you can't purchase it. So they still have some control. Portugal is a good example. In the late 90s, they had the worst HIV drug problem in Europe, institute a series of reforms, including decriminalization. And the following years, looking at their drug use studies, use of cocaine, use of all drugs have now dropped below American use rates.
Dave, why don't you tell us what your thoughts are in terms of if people do have the ability to use these drugs legally, do you worry that the addiction rate will become greater?
I really honestly don't know. I don't think I have an opinion about that. It might go up. It might go down. It might stay exactly where it is. All I have are individual stories. And I remember very clearly my aunt of dear memory, now deceased, born in 1903. So she came of age during Prohibition, and she told me she never developed a problem with alcohol, but she told me that she doesn't think she ever would have taken a first drink if it hadn't been illegal. It just it made her angry that it was illegal, and of course they changed that in 1933. And I think that that is part of what gives drugs their cachet. You know, it gives a person a chance to feel like he's walking on the edge or on the wild side. if it were something that your father did, I don't know how tempting it would be for a kid to try it.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, Mark's calling from Montgomery. Hi, Mark. What's your question?
I tuned in late. I'm sorry, but I heard a comment by one of your guests saying that we know that the states that have legalized marijuana have higher rates of young people addicted, and it doesn't seem to me that it's been legalized very long. Where did those numbers come from?
Well, I did my research on the SAM project, which is smart. I don't know what it stands for. Smart Approaches to Marijuana, and that is a national public policy organization that is opposed to marijuana legalization.
The one project, though.
Well, they have multiple studies that they cite here. I'm just summarizing.
Yeah, in fact, there is some other studies that studied marijuana usage in states where medical marijuana was legalized and found that teen use in those states did not change. Adult use changed a little bit. And one interesting thing that came out was DUI-related accidents went slightly down. And I'm not sure what the genesis of that is, but it's just kind of an interesting thing that ought to be looked at further.
Mark, thanks for your call. Did you have another question?
Well, I'm going to have to do my own research because I'm not sure that I believe that usage rates went up that much. And I know that my costs for incarcerating my fellow man have gone way up.
All right, Mark. Well, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100 is our number if you have a question or a comment. You brought up an interesting point, Howard, about DUIs. And I wonder if there has been much concern that if marijuana is legalized, if that's going to be a greater concern of more people on the road driving high.
I think it is a concern. And it's important to make a distinction between use and, for instance, if a guy sitting at home watching a Bengals game, smoking marijuana and eating Cheetos, nobody really cares, in my opinion. That's his issue. He goes outside and gets in his car and starts endangering people. He should be locked up just as if he were using alcohol or any other substance. So it's not the drug use. It's the problem, particularly. It's the consequences of that drug use. When you go out and drive under the influence of any drug, there's criminal penalties in place, and we ought to lock those people up.
Any other thoughts?
Well, there is machinery in place already to deal with impaired drivers, and it used to be called, the offense used to be called DWI, driving while intoxicated, and I think it's now called driving under the influence of any substance.
But you can't, a breathalyzer test certainly can test for alcohol. Is there a test, does anyone know, for marijuana?
I believe the technology exists to do that, and as we move more and more, as more and more states legalize marijuana, I think that technology will come forward. I arrested a whole lot of people for driving under the influence or driving while intoxicated, and the way we arrest people is we don't know what drug they used. We're looking at their driving performance and stopping them and then make a determination. I took many a guy to the station to test for DUI. The breathalyzer reports 0.000 alcohol. At that point, we knew what we had, took him to the hospital, got a blood test. The charge is the same. Consequences are the same.
So the blood test will show you.
It will.
Mm-hmm. What was I going to say? Part of what needs to happen, too, is much more research on the components of marijuana. Because anybody will tell you and agree with the fact that smoking a product like that isn't healthy for you from a physical, lung, heart perspective. So I think there's much more research to be done because there are truly probably some components to marijuana that have a medicinal benefit. We just haven't, identified that, determined what the dosage is, determined what the side effects and drug interactions are or potentially are for it. That's why our position is that it needs to go through the FDA process. We need to make sure we are dosing and determining the side effects, et cetera, so that if there is a component or components to marijuana, we already have several drugs on the market right now that have components of marijuana in it to treat people for various things. So more research is needed, and we advocate going through the FDA process for.
I'm going to agree with Mary on there are lots of things in illegal marijuana that we don't know what's there. I don't want people to smoke marijuana. I don't think it's a good idea. And after it's legalized, and I think it probably will be, don't look for Howard Rotz in line to buy any. I just don't want it. But people that are purchasing marijuana now are doing so in the illegal market, which supports the violence. 60% of cartel revenue comes from marijuana. When we legalize marijuana, we steal that revenue away from these killers, and that's my priority.
Elise is calling from Loveland. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. Hi, Elisa. What's your question?
Well, it's more of a statement. I have an 89-year-old mother, and she has been in great pain the past 6 months progressively. They've treated her with methadone, gabapentin, and a number of other drugs.
Now, she has glaucoma, is that right?
And I have glaucoma and fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I just would love to be able to see if any of the marijuana drugs or strains would help, A, my mother, who has, you know, horrible knees and is in great pain, even though she's been prescribed these drugs, and if it would help those of us that suffer with fibromyalgia and glaucoma.
I don't know that anyone's a doctor on the panel and can and talk about the medicinal effects of the drugs. Did you all have any comments?
Well, I am a nurse.
Oh,
so
there you go.
What we know is this American Medical Association, all of those types of muscular sclerosis, glaucoma society, all of that, none of them have endorsed smoked marijuana for medicinal purposes. Again, it goes back to the fact that we just need more research to identify what's that component in there that might make a difference and what's the dosage, et cetera.
I'm for it for two reasons. I hope that Elisa and her mom can make a visit to Colorado and get some medical marijuana and see if it helps. I don't think any of us would withhold something that would be helpful in these situations. And so if she's tried other stuff and it doesn't work, go for it. The other thing is their purchase of medical marijuana is, again, in a legal system that's not marijuana being bought from the cartels. So in essence, they're stealing revenue from the cartel at the same time as they do that.
Elisa, thanks for your call.
Yes, thank you. I do have one more question.
Okay.
Based on what your guest just said about visiting Colorado, you don't have to be a legal resident there to purchase it for medicinal use?
I don't believe so. You can buy it for recreational use. And as a matter of fact, that's one concern prohibitionists are bringing up now is people from out of state coming in and they're talking about marijuana tourism in Colorado, which personally I think is a good thing.
Okay, and then you can't fly with it, so it would have to be.
I imagine you'd have to
drive.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the crazy thing: you'd be risking a criminal conviction by doing that, and it's just
right.
That's insane.
Yeah,
Elisa, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
513-419-7100 is our number. Mary, you brought up something a few minutes ago about just the whole idea of. We know that cigarette smoke is dangerous. Marijuana smoke, the research isn't there yet to say exactly how dangerous it is, at least not the research that's there with smoking. But there's a no smoking law in Ohio in public places as well. Do you all believe that if this did become legal, people would just have to smoke at home? Do you think that that would cause other issues in terms of other laws that are already in place related to cigarettes?
No, I agree. It would impact those other laws as well. In fact, I've seen where they've talked about that's a need or a concern that would happen if it was legalized, that we would then have to include that in the smoke-free workplaces, the public smoking pieces, and the like.
You know, the anti-tobacco movement since the 1960s is one of the most significant and positive public health stories in our country. And I think it's an example that we can control these drugs in a regulated legal market. And have far more success than we've had under a prohibition setup.
Dave?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm not here as a strong advocate on either decriminalizing or keeping the laws as they are. I'm kind of neutral on that question. But I like very much the idea that it's becoming a discussable issue. I think the fact that there's been not only a prohibition of marijuana, but a prohibition of talk about marijuana for a long, long time, since Harry Anslinger left the prohibition of alcohol business and took over the Bureau of Tax and Tobacco, and the guys, the AT&T, that go after marijuana. That's why we don't know the stuff that we don't know, because it has been a forbidden topic for, 60, 70 years.
Bill's calling from Oxford. Hi, Bill. What's your question?
First of all, I want to say hi to Dave Logan, the best of the best of the best, in the Prospect House. My big concern is cannabidiols are oil-soluble, and from what I've learned, they coat the brain cells. And my experience in college and high school was when I smoked marijuana, I didn't do well on the test the next day. Our children coming out of high school were way behind the Asian and European kids where marijuana isn't legal. So are we looking at the actual physical aspects of marijuana smoking and how it's going to impact our educational system, which is already falling behind the Asian and European systems? And I know that from travel with Procter & Gamble. So that's my concern.
Thoughts?
Yeah, the research has shown not only is it highly addictive, but some of the changes in the brain result in loss of IQ points. The children that are using marijuana while they're in school do poorly or less well academically than those who are not using. There's no medicinal value at this point. This is why they are marijuana is Schedule One or the other drugs are Schedule Two is because of these types of things.
That's a very interesting comment, and I do take it seriously. But I would suggest if you're looking for the reasons for our relatively poor performance in the school system, it has to do more with poverty and nutrition and class size.
Howard?
Yeah, I'd like to say, you know, we, in this marijuana issue, we're not comparing legalization to utopia. Mm-hmm. About 40% of kids now use marijuana. That's under an illegal prohibition setup. I believe that if we went to a legalized marketplace, we could actually reduce those numbers. Nobody wants kids to use.
If it would become legal, there would be similar age limits you would recommend as there are for alcohol?
Absolutely. I think, you know, who sets the hours of sale for drug pushers? No, the drug pushers do. As Dave mentioned earlier, they'll bring it to your house. Who looks at the product quality? You know, who does quality control for these cartels? Those things would be a benefit. And earlier on, Mary mentioned that we don't know all the things that are in marijuana that we buy in the illegal market. If it were legalized, we'd have some quality, some product control so that we could know what's going into this stuff. So I think those would be positive aspects of legalization.
Bill, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100. Mike's calling from Westchester. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how's it going?
Just fine. What's your question?
My question would be a little relating a little bit to what was said about Anslinger earlier. How much does the panel know, firstly, how much does the panel know about the way in which marijuana was made illegal, the smear campaign by William Randolph Hearst, and the kind of investments that DuPont and Hearst had in the timber and nylon industries? And nextly, just wanted to make a statement about something that Franklin said. And I believe Franklin said, once you give up liberty for security, you will get neither and you deserve neither. And I just wondered if anyone on the panel thinks that this might pertain to our liberties being invested in marijuana.
Comments?
I think it is something of a personal freedom issue. Ronald Reagan said that when the government tries to protect you from yourself, it's gone too far. And that's pretty much the drug use. As I said earlier, if you're an adult, you're choosing to use this stuff, and you're not harming other people, that's your right to do. That's part of our personal liberty.
And so far, excuse me, we don't make it make all the things that are bad for you illegal, and I hope we don't get to that point.
Mike, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. We go now to Michelle from Western Hills. Hi, Michelle. Michelle? Michelle? And last time on Michelle. All righty. I think she's not there. We did have an email from Lou from Northern Kentucky, who thinks that marijuana should be legal, but he says the effects of pot on the adolescent brain can cause problems. And he again says heavy regulation, which is something we had talked about earlier. We're going to go now to Chris in Mason. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Just fine. What's your comment or question?
Good, good. I am actually an Ohio resident, born and raised here, and I have just now been involved with a startup in the state of Washington under the 502 regulation, which is the recreational part. We're opening a business. I come from a strong pharmaceutical background over 15 years, and I think this conversation has been very impressive, hitting every issue that we're dealing with and opening our business in the state of Washington. In terms of the medical side, there's so much that can be done, and it would be going through the FDA to get approval with the CBD content, which is more of what is thought of in the past, the medical benefits of marijuana. The THC content in all these products are regulated very heavily, and there is a low amount in each product that can go out into the marketplace, and it has to be analyzed by third-party labs and what have you. So it's not like we're going to be inundating the market with old skunk weed, so to speak, the illegal mindset that's been out there for years. I think we're on the threshold of really overcoming that. And we're on the threshold of a wave of many states coming on board, probably within the next 3 to 5 years, I believe. I didn't know if the panel wanted to comment on any of that.
Let me ask you a question. That's a big step to move from Cincinnati to Washington. Are you interested in selling it for pharmaceutical uses or for recreational use?
We're going to do both. We're going to have very high-quality strands of marijuana where we can test them. And we're going to develop hybrid, high-quality strands with a high CBD content, and we're going to have those analyzed by third-party labs. We're going to go to institutions that are willing to look at the metal.
Hello? I think we just lost Chris. But your comments about what he said, thanks, Chris.
I think some of the things Chris said remind me that legal entrepreneurs in this country and the controlled marketplace will be a much more effective system than turning this over to the drug cartels and the drug dealers to control.
Mary?
Staying within my role, I was reminded that we have many legal drugs that are abused as it is right now, that are legal, difficult to control, and highly addictive. And I think we have our hands full.
We certainly have our hands full. In the state of Ohio, for every 10 people that needs treatment, only one is getting treatment, and we're just so woefully behind on that. If that were true for tuberculosis or HIV, there would be a public outcry. I mean, that's a public health question, people would say, and correctly. And I think that the lack of treatment spots for beds and outpatient slots for alcoholics and drug addicts is equally a public health question. And the more we could begin to look at it as a public health question instead of exclusively as a legal problem, mm-hmm. I think it would be good.
We're talking about changing the drug laws this afternoon, and we will continue our discussion talking about the role of treatment and more treatment for addicts. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking about legalizing or decriminalizing marijuana and other controlled substances. Joining me are Coalition for a Drug-Free Cincinnati Executive Director Mary Haig, Executive Director of Prospect House Dave Logan, and author and former Cincinnati Police Captain Howard Rotz. He's also the past Executive Director of the Alcoholism Council, and his book is Drugs, Crime, and Violence from Trafficking to Treatment. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Before the break, Dave, you were talking about the number of addicts and the number that really are not getting the treatment that they need. Do you worry if marijuana and other controlled substances are legalized, decriminalized, that the addiction rate will grow?
Well, if it did, it wouldn't matter that much to us as an agency because we're always full. We run full. We sometimes have people sleeping on couches. So we have a 2 to 3 month waiting list anyway. And sometimes if it gets up to 6 months, we just stop taking people onto that list because it's almost a cruelty to make people think that they're on a waiting list for something that may not ever happen. That's our situation, and that's been that way. It was that way before the heroin epidemic descended upon us. And I know that employers in the state of Ohio are very interested in – there is pressure from commerce to try to get people to the point where they could pass a drug screen because so many people are not eligible for work in even regular jobs because a drug screen is required.
We go now to Jerry in Northside. Hi, Jerry. What's your question?
Yeah, I have a couple comments real quick. First of all, I'd like to say that I was in the military for quite a while, and as a disabled veteran, when I got out, I was injured and had several surgeries on my legs and was also suffering from PTSD. At the time when going to the VA, they put me on several different medications, including a cocktail for the PTSD, which includes Seroquel and Paxil. There was an article in Time, which I read, in which veterans were dying from this cocktail that the VA was giving them, so I decided to get off of this medication. I did have some friends in Michigan that suggested to try the medical marijuana, and so at the time I wasn't too sure about it because I used to smoke some weed back in the day, and it didn't really seem like it ever would do anything for me, at least not medically wise. However, being in going to Michigan, they, you know, a lot of what your panel's talking about, a lot of what they're saying is they're talking about smoking medical marijuana. However, they have tinctures up there that are made from marijuana. They have candy, they have coffee, they have butter, they have food products. When I went up there and I spoke with somebody, they asked me what specifically was my problem. Was it pain? Was it anxiety? Was it a PTSD? Once I explained to them what was going on, they made their recommendations, and none of it was actually smoking the marijuana. I received the tincture. I was been using the tincture. It alleviated my anxiety and a lot of the side effects that I was having from the medication. And it helped with my PTSD, and surprisingly, it alleviated a lot of my pain. Being in Ohio, I don't have the option to do that here. I would much rather not destroy my liver with the medication that the VA gives me. I'd much rather do something with the medical marijuana.
Jerry, your final point?
Say real quick, my final point being is that I mean, it's proven there's indisputable proof as far as with cancer and AIDS patients with it alleviating their pain. And I'll take my comments up here.
Jerry, thanks so much for your call. Mary, Howard, Dave?
At Prospect House, we run a group for combat veterans, in-country Vietnam vets called AfterNAM. And we have learned in that group that one of the many symptoms of PTSD is obsessive repeating nightmares. And we've learned that people who are on antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs do not get relief from those nightmares through those drugs. That they, in fact, keep a kind of a – it's as if there's a kind of a door in the head that is kept open with those drugs. And we believe that abstinence is a better base upon which to build treatment for a PTSD person.
John,
it's a very interesting subject.
John's calling from Westwood. Hi, John.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Good.
Good. I'd like to say hello and greetings to Mr. Logan. Sean Jay calling Mr. Logan. I've had the opportunity to study in under the classes being taught by David Logan, and I had, you know, the blessing to learn a lot from him. Basically, my point being is that I think it's an incredible thing what we're doing here today on live radio. We have law enforcement, we have medical opinions, and we have, you know, professional counselors all under one roof at a studio. My personal experience being a recovering addict and alcoholic is that no human power on God's green earth can really, dispense anything in a pill form or a prescription pad or even, you know, laying back on the counselor's couch and just letting my thoughts flow. In order for me to have the 2 years and 3 months clean that I do today, I had to find a power that was greater than myself, and I had to get involved thoroughly in a 12-step program. I will add that the gentleman that called before, I have a friend who's also a doctor at University Hospital, and she, you know, had the opportunity to hear some of my past experiences with drugs and alcohol. And after I explained to her of how many treatment detox centers that I have been into and the medications that they gave me, and she said, you know, it just something that really kind of, you know, sparked my interest when she said, I wonder if we could take medical marijuana and wean the patients that are detoxing from heroin, alcohol, which is what I understand the most deadly of all, and try a natural approach as we can put it in food form and other edible forms. Not so mm-hmm. much, you know.
Mary, do you have a comment? Let's let Mary respond to that. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I guess my thought was around, let's see if I get my thought. So much, it's so complex, the way the brain functions. We know so much more. The research is evolving every day, that it's going to take a lot and a lot more to understand how the brain handles all of the medicine. I am much more for a non-medical, non-natural, just other avenues for learning how to handle pain. Pain is a symptom. We can't ignore that. But anyway, I just think there is just a lot more research out there that's telling us and informing us about which ways to go.
I think if you're plagued by addiction, that better than stepping down to another addictive mm-hmm. substance would be stepping away from the addictive substance yes. altogether.
John, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. Robert's calling. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how you doing? My name is Rob Ryan, the president of Ohio Normal, and I'll be real quick because it's kind of let other people talk. But there's
tell us for those that
right
don't
now.
Know what Normal is.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Very good.
Okay. The first thing is that marijuana by Ohio and the federal government is a Schedule I substance. And you look at the definition of that, and it means it's deadly, addictive, and no medical use. Which one of those is true? None. And you have to be all three. Deadly, addictive, and no medical use. The other point is, let's get real. Jail is not the answer for any illness, okay? And drug addiction is an illness, and jail isn't the answer. The last point I have is marijuana. You know how you spell marijuana in Ohio? It's with an H, not a J. And the reason that is, and all of these drug laws have deep, deep racist roots and enforcement, okay? So, one, we got to stop lying. It's not a Schedule I drug, and the full medical benefits of marijuana will only come about when marijuana is fully legalized, controlled, regulated, and taken out of the hands of thugs and criminals.
Robert, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Your comments to Robert? Howard?
I wanted to get back to something before we ran out of time, something Dave said that I thought was extremely important, and that's the need for treatment for addicts. You know, addicts are the cartel's best customers. Those are the people that are out there 24/7 seeking drugs. They're the high-volume customers for the cartels. Every addict that we move from the illegal market into a treatment program is a loss of a high-volume customer. So if we really want to win the war on drugs, we need to expand treatment dramatically and get a hold of these folks and get them out of the arms of the cartels and into the arms of folks like Dave and Prospect House.
And another thing, another point that I think goes along with that is that one of our sayings at the House, I learned this from one of our residents, is if all you ever do is detox, you will surely retox. And the point being that this is not generally understood, that detox is not the same as treatment. Detox is a process that takes 3 to 5 days for most people. That's not treatment. That's not the same as treatment. If you just only detox and then leave and go back to the street, you will surely use again if you're an addict.
And then I was going to add that with the changes that we're starting to see with healthcare reform, we are going to start to see more people having access to treatment, as well as the need for family physicians and internists and ER docs to understand addiction, to understand the cycle, and to learn about the best ways to treat it.
We go now to Bill from Blue Ash. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. What's your question?
After listening, more of a comment than a question, but after listening to this whole program, I think the thing that occurs to me is at the end of the day, I mean, it's still going to be there, cannabis, that is. It's been around in our population for thousands of years. It's not going anywhere. I think it comes down to a question of we have to decide, do we want to leave it in the hands of the dealers and the cartels, or do we want to take it over, regulate it, have more control, more quality control, and take it out of the hands of the criminals? Because either way, it's not going anywhere.
Howard?
Couldn't have said it any better. Thank you, Bill.
Mary disagrees.
No comment.
Bill, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Chris is calling from Anderson. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What's your comment?
Someone made the comment about making the age limit, over 21. And, I know that alcohol is probably is such a huge problem in the high schools and in college. And is doing that, is that going to have the same effect? I mean, will that just make the young people more, want it more? I don't know. And I'm not,
So you're basically, you're saying since alcohol is a problem and that's illegal for anyone over 21, what's to prevent marijuana, if it's legal for over 21, to also be a problem for teenagers?
Exactly, right.
Thoughts?
I think it's almost worse than alcohol because the age is 20.
Let's let the panel respond. Howard?
There's still going to be problems with it. I mean, again, the point is, alcohol is illegal. Marijuana is illegal now for teenagers, and we have a hell of a problem with marijuana. Everybody would agree with that. I think we'll have less of a problem if we move to a legalized, regulated structure.
I think it's likely that the people who have problems with any substance are a minority. It's like, I would guess, about 10%. And when we make laws that apply to everybody that we're actually aiming at the 10%, it makes a difficult conceptual fit.
Mayor?
Good point.
Yes. We've seen – now, in our region, youth, the average percentage of youth who are participating in marijuana use over the past 30 days is only around 11%. For alcohol, it's like 17%. And we've just seen tobacco use drop to under 10%, and prescription drugs is much lower as
well. Do you think that those numbers are higher for alcohol because it is legal and easier to obtain?
Well, I think those are primary factors, yes.
This is a very counterintuitive point, but there is a cadre of college presidents who've come out in favor of reducing the alcohol age to 18 so as not to criminalize alcohol use on campus. Now, I don't think I'm in favor of that, but it's an interesting movement.
Cynthia's calling from Indian Hill. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, everybody. I had a question for your panel and just wondered if, because it is a complex issue, but are we being a little naive to think that there still won't be an illegal demand for a product that maybe either has a heightened effect or it's just kind of a trend additive? Because to the point of an earlier caller, everybody kind of wants the next thing and the plus version.
Now, Howard did address that a little bit earlier. Do you want to take that again?
I don't think that there's, and a matter of fact, in the Netherlands, where they have this kind of quasi-legal setup for marijuana, they achieve what they call separation of the markets. Most people get into buying heroin through the illegal market. They're there buying marijuana. Dealer really doesn't want to sell them marijuana. He's got better products. And, hey, baby, come back next week. I got something for you that you're going to like a lot better. So that's how we get people introduced to these other more serious drugs. And by creating this separation of the market, moving marijuana out of that illegal drug market, we break that connection between the initial user and those harder drugs.
Cynthia, thanks so much for your call. We're almost out of time. I want to let everybody know we have links on our website to all of your organizations and information. Thank you all so very much for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We've been talking today about changing the drug laws. My guests have been Coalition for a Drug-Free Cincinnati Executive Director Mary Haig, Executive Director of Prospect House Dave Logan, and author and former Cincinnati Police Captain Howard Rotz. He's also the past executive director of the Alcoholism Council. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Rick Andres. Our engineering staff is Don Danko, Bill Dean, and Mike Makinich. We also had help today from Kevin Reynolds. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.